Around the world, more than 80 women have accused Peter Nygaard of crimes ranging from rape to sex trafficking.
He far exceeds Jeffrey Epstein. He far exceeds Bill Cosby. He exceeds anything that I think our world has seen so far.
A pattern of predatory behavior spanning half a century. Nygaard denies it all, but now he faces criminal charges.
If this were a poor man, he would have been in jail decades ago. He is hid in plain sight.
Evil by Design, available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast. This weekend, the U.S. House of Representatives voted to provide $61 billion in aid to Ukraine. The aid package goes to the Senate for approval this week. Meanwhile, the Pentagon says it has a massive infusion of military aid ready to go. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has said that his country would lose the war without U.S. aid. Chris York is a news editor for the Kyiv Independent. He is in Kyiv. Chris, hello.
Hi, Matt.
How relieved are Ukrainians to hear that this aid package seems to be reaching the finish line?
Incredibly relieved. As you just pointed out there, people like President Zelensky had said that, you know, if this aid bill wasn't passed, that Ukraine faced a really, really dire situation on the front lines, potentially even, you know, losing loads more territory, potentially even losing the war. So, yeah, there was a big sigh of relief over the weekend and almost a sort of celebratory atmosphere, especially if you looked on social media as well and Ukrainians that I spoke to here. Very, very relieved. But also, I think it's been slightly short-lived as well, as people have realized just in the days afterwards that, you know, there's a lot more work to be done. That military aid now needs to get to Ukraine, be distributed. And there's the next few weeks until it's all in place are going to be quite precarious still.
As you understand it, I mean, and in that context, what would this aid package mean specifically for Ukraine? How's the money going to be spent and where will this go right away?
I think the kind of individual details of like individual weapons and things like that haven't been made public, but two areas where Ukraine is in dire need are artillery shells and air defenses. Both like Ukrainian officials and Ukraine's allies have been calling for more of both for months now. And the artillery rounds, they're crucial on the front lines for repelling Russian attacks. And as we've seen over the last couple of months, Ukraine has been running low on ammunition, on artillery ammunition, and that's been directly attributed to the loss of Avdiivka a couple of months ago. So, like, Ukraine has been losing territory to Russian advances as a direct result of not having enough artillery ammunition. And then, as far as air defenses are concerned, throughout 2023, throughout last year, if you lived in Kyiv, you'd often be kept awake at night by explosions. There were lots of Russian mass missile and drone attacks on the city, but those explosions were the sounds of missiles and drones being effectively intercepted by the air defense systems that Western countries had supplied to Ukraine. That picture sort of changed over the last few months, and there haven't been as many attacks as there were in the same period last year, but the ones that there have been, more Russian missiles and drones have been making the way through the defenses. And, you know, one of the kind of the starkest examples of that we saw a few weeks ago was the complete destruction of a power station outside of Kyiv.
What does it tell you that this aid package became a political football in the United States? It was really difficult to get past.
I mean, to be honest, I still don't fully understand the thinking behind the Republicans who are opposed to this. I mean, if you look at what some of them say, people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, I mean, she looks like she's just reading stuff off of a Kremlin website, some of the things that she comes out with. And, you know, there's a few US lawmakers who like take that same kind of point. And it's baffling, and a lot of their Republican colleagues who support the bill have expressed similar sentiments. I think one of them called Marjorie Taylor Greene uniquely demented the other day. It's a really baffling position to take, where you're effectively emboldening one of America's biggest adversaries on the global stage.
In an election year, one of the reasons why, and I'm certainly not speaking for them, but one of the reasons why those comments are being made and one of the reasons why it's become a political issue is because people in the United States, the sense is, need to focus on, or that's at least that's the political argument, need to focus on matters at home. That billions of dollars going out the door is not billions of dollars that are being spent there. Do you worry that that does not, you know, augur well for the future aid packages that Ukraine will need if this war is going to continue?
It doesn't augur well, but also it's not a legitimate argument, because if you look at where the $61 billion of aid in this package, and I think it's easy for people to just look at that and think it's a big bag of cash that's going directly to Ukraine and America is just giving away this money, but that's not accurate at all. I think, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think about half of it is going to replenish American stocks of weapons that are being sent to Ukraine. And those weapons are made in the US by American factories. These American factories employ Americans. And a lot of these factories are in the districts of Republican lawmakers who have come out against the bill. So they're effectively arguing against a bill which will provide a huge boost to the economies in which they're actually in charge of. So I don't think that argument stands up at all.
You mentioned the reaction on social media. How are Ukrainians feeling as this war goes on? We have done stories about people who are fleeing to avoid conscription. There's a new law that's in place meant to crack down on that. As this war drags on, how are Ukrainians feeling?
Tired, I think, is the best way of putting it, which is only to be expected. You know, we've been in this war for over 2 years now. I think it's kind of illustrative to compare it to the exact same time last year. And I remember, you know, we were expecting the Ukrainian counteroffensive. There were high hopes for it. And I remember walking around interviewing people in the parks in Kyiv. And there was this real sense of optimism and that, like, even that the war could be over by the end of the year. Obviously, that didn't happen. The counteroffensive failed and petered out. And there's still a feeling of resilience, and there's still, I think this the passing of the aid bill has been a big boost. And there's definitely isn't a sense, there isn't any sort of defeatist sentiment kind of kicking in. But I think the realization that this is just going to be longer than anyone thought or imagined, particularly at this time last year, it's definitely dampened the general mood quite a bit.
Just briefly, do you worry that conscription law will further dampen it? The fact that more people are going to be forced to fight in a war that doesn't really show any signs of ending anytime soon?
It's a very sensitive topic over here. And, you know, I think I find it really difficult to comment on, to be honest, because I think, like, unless you are a Ukrainian of mobilization age and you actually face this, I think it's really, really difficult to kind of put yourself in the shoes of someone and say, like, would you prepare to go and fight in the trenches after 3 months training? It's not an attractive prospect for anyone in any country at any time. But unfortunately, because of Russia's full-scale invasion, Ukraine finds itself in this position where it's having to ask that of its citizens.
I mean, even your reluctance to talk about it speaks to the dilemma that President Zelensky faces. I mean, this law had something like 4,000 amendments. He's been resisting putting it through, but now is in a place where he has to put it through.
Yeah, I mean, Ukraine simply doesn't have a choice. You know, if they can't get enough people to fight the war, then they literally just can't fight the war. But, you know, it's like, how do you decide? I think it's not necessarily the issue of, like, the controversial thing isn't mobilizing, say, 300,000 people. Mm. It's which 300,000 people do you mobilize? Like, do you target certain age groups? Who do you allow to be exempt? Do you allow people who work in certain industries to be exempt? And these sorts of, like, more granular issues in who should be subject to the mobilization law, I think they're the ones that are causing more of the controversy in Ukraine rather than the idea that people need to be mobilized. Mm. Everyone can agree on the fact that they need troops to fight the war. It's just when you get down to the nitty-gritty of deciding who actually that law will apply to. Right. That's where it becomes a bit more of a debate over here.
Chris, good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt.
Chris York, a news editor for the Kyiv Independent. He was in Kyiv.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.